On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are expected to call for U.S. troop reductions in Iraq. Yesterday, Democratic Senator Carl Levin, the incoming Armed Services Committee chairman, indicated he favors a phased redeployment of U.S. troops within 4 to 6 months. At the National Mall today, the groundbreaking ceremony. This is the Quality News Network. Today, the Bush administration filed federal court documents saying Guantanamo Bay prisoners have no rights in U.S. civil courts. The White House defended its authority to arrest people overseas and hold them in detention camps indefinitely with no access to attorneys, families, or groups such as the Red Cross. At the Pentagon, the term of Marine Commandant General Mike Hadgee ended today. The general says there was no real plan for the running of Iraq after Saddam Hussein was stripped of power. He says his questions and concerns worked their way up the power chain, but he never received answers. In Baghdad, 20 people were killed, 18 wounded when a bomb exploded today on a minibus. Elsewhere in Iraq, at least 10 people were killed by gunmen. Yesterday, a suicide bomber killed 35 police recruits. In Camp Pendleton, a fourth U.S. Marine agreed to a plea bargain for the kidnapping and murdering of an Iraqi civilian last April. He pleaded guilty to lesser charges. The 109th Congress reconvened today. Likely House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has endorsed Pennsylvania Congressman John Murtha to be the majority leader. Florida Senator Mel Martinez will become the next chairman of the Republican National Committee. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are expected to call for U.S. troop reductions in Iraq within 4 to 6 months. Today, President Bush expressed opposition to the plan. At the National Mall today, the groundbreaking ceremony for the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. It is the first Washington memorial for an African American. It's expected to be completed in 2008. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani announced formation of a presidential exploration committee for the 2008 election. A recent CNN poll says 29% of Republicans favor his candidacy. Senator John McCain also announced he's taking steps to announce his candidacy. In California, San Francisco today withdrew its bid for the 2016 Olympics. The San Francisco 49ers announced several days ago it would not build the new stadium meant to be the linchpin of the San Francisco bid. In the Gaza Strip, Hamas and Fatah have reportedly agreed upon a new candidate for Palestinian prime minister. The U.S.-educated professor Mohammed Shabir has ties to both groups. At Cape Canaveral, the Space Shuttle Discovery is on the launching pad. The date for the launch...
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The UN says collection of rainwater could provide a cheap, easy solution to Africa's droughts. That's a result of a pilot project in Kenya. A university study released today says the risk of a certain kind of breast cancer goes up in younger women who eat red meat. The study says the increased risk comes from hormonal residues in cattle. The Treasury Department reports October's budget deficit is $49.3 billion. That's up $2 billion from last October. The FDA is issuing a warning for patients and parents of children taking the popular flu remedy Tamiflu. That's due to reports of delirium, hallucination, and suicidal behavior, particularly in children. Australian government scientists have invented a T-shirt for air guitar players. The shirt has motion sensors in its elbows and translates movement instrument into corresponding sound. Sun Microsystems announced today it will make Java free on the Internet as open source software. The addition of Java is one of the most significant in years for the open source community. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.76 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 23 points at 12,131, the NASDAQ up 17 at 2406, and the S&P 500 was up 4 at 1384. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Insurance plans are underwritten.
Lord, I'm a voodoo child.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning. That's right. It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and who expect working Americans to pay for their billionaires' gains. And now, brought to you by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, it's the Bruce Birch Radio Program with your host, Bruce Birch.
Well, the night I was born, Lord, I swear the moon turned a fire red.
All right. Good evening. This is Bruce Birch. It's about 5 minutes past the top of the hour here on the east coast of the United States. It's dark 30 out there. That's right. It's late night radio here on the Head On Radio Network. I am Bruce Birch. I'm your host for this radio program. Glad to be back with you here on this Monday, the November the 13th, 2006. Much has happened since last week, and we're going to talk about a lot of that. We're going to take your phone calls also. If you want to get in on the show tonight, you can dial into 1-877-443-2366. That'll take you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network in Wild Wonderful West Virginia, where they'll get you on with me. You can also email me if you are so inclined to use the internet. Of course, you know, it gets routed through an NSA wiretapping station somewhere in the middle of the United States, but it eventually will make it to me. You can send that to bruce@brucebirch.com. A lot of stuff going on, and you know, I don't know where to begin aside from just saying, you know, the fallout from the election is just, it's really becoming, well, it's somewhat comical, but it's also showing the divisions in both parties. We have seen, we've seen a brewing fight over the House Majority position. Jack Murtha is trying to take that. And Nancy Pelosi is standing behind him, according to Jack Murtha's office. Now, Jack Murtha, you will remember, was the first Democrat to really come out and against the war, who originally supported the war. And, you know, this guy is a decorated Marine. He had the ear, or was the ear, for a lot of folks in the Pentagon, very connected to a lot of generals, made the rounds of all the talk show, the Sunday morning talk shows, and the various other news programs, Fox News, et cetera, faux news, excuse me, et cetera, to basically get the word out there that it's time to rethink this whole stay the course kind of thing. And of course, the White House, for its part, is today saying, no, we're not going to any kind of phased redeployment of U.S. troops is, as they said, any kind of plan, a phased withdrawal plan, quote, doesn't have any meat and bones to it. That's what Tony Snow said, Tony Snowjob. So there's, you know, they're holding their ground, and it looks like there's going to be some interesting times ahead in the political arena. Was also checking out something else earlier today. Much earlier today, I happened to see it around 1 o'clock this morning. There was an excellent, excellent documentary on CNN, and it was about the mountain medics, and these are the guys and gals who are first-line responders in Baghdad, who take care of the wounded soldiers and really take care of anybody wounded that comes across their path. And you know, the most interesting, you know, it was heartbreaking. I mean, it was incredibly enthralling, and they didn't actually show any real surgery because that kind of, but you know, they showed the folks coming in, you know, soldiers coming in with ruined extremities. I mean, you know, crushed legs and hands that were just completely disfigured. You know, and you know what? It was real. It was real, and it touched my heart to watch this. The reason why it did was because, you know, as a result of the body armor and the various safety precautions that we have in place now for our soldiers, they're living through a lot of stuff that, say, for instance, in Vietnam, they would not have lived through. So there was incredibly a much larger number of fatalities during Vietnam, you know, but in this war, there is a larger number, I don't know if that's a word or not, there's a much larger number of injuries that are extreme injuries, but not life-threatening. Many, many people are coming home missing limbs. They're coming home with brain injuries. They're coming home, you know, basically to live the rest of their lives very changed people. One sergeant in particular, who was the platoon sergeant for a platoon, came in and he brought in two of his soldiers that had survived a vehicle-borne IED, which is an improvised explosive device. He came into the medical station there, the ER, if you will, and after the two guys that he was there, that he brought there, had their surgeries and were sent off. One of them was sent off to a neurosurgeon because, I mean, he was pretty much out of it. He had no, I mean, they were saying that he was really had no, the chances of him surviving, the chances of him having any kind of meaningful life was gone, but they were going to send him to a neurosurgeon to try to have him patched up or, you know, figure out what they're going to do. The sergeant that brought them in, who was not injured, after he brought the soldiers in, he had to go back out to the scene and collect the body parts of his soldiers. He had to go back out and pick up hands and arms and legs and torsos and try to match them up with each other and put them in bags to be shipped home to their families. Came back to the ER, and as he was standing there talking to someone, he completely collapsed, fainted dead away. And when he came back to, the distress that this man was experiencing was beyond. I mean, I looked at him, and the first thing that came across my mind was that this man will never be the same after this experience. And this stuff happens daily in Iraq. It happens daily. Little girls being shot, being brought into the ER. A six-year-old girl got shot. Bullet passed through her brainstem. She was still alive, but functioned, but completely gone. A man came in, you know, and his entire right leg was crushed. But you know what? And you know, I, so I watched this, and as I was watching this, you know, I found myself reacting emotionally, what was going on. And I, you know what, I can't think, it was completely one of those experiences watching this documentary that brought me to the point of understanding why it is that I am so vehemently against Bush's folly. I'm vehemently against Bush's folly because he does not know the meaning of war. He does not know the wreckage that it creates. He doesn't understand how broken people come back from this experience. And they're never the same again, and they may never ever function normally in society again. But they're all against phased redeployment. Oh no, we don't want to take them their troops out of there. We've got to keep that cheap oil flowing to the United States, don't we? As they're playing chess with human lives in Washington, men and women are getting blown to bits and being shipped home in body bags. Is that the tone for the show tonight? Well, I don't know, but I will tell you this. I'm damn sick of this administration putting on these acts like it's everything's fine and lovely and rosy over there, when you and I know that's absolutely not true. When you and I know that, you know, that the deaths are mounting, when you and I know that, well, bottom line, that everything that they've told us about this war has been a lie. As of today, the American deaths is 2,853. The official number of wounded is 21,077. Estimated to be anywhere from 22,000 to 100,000 wounded. And those wounded, ladies and gentlemen, those wounded aren't, that's not a scratch. That's not a grazed bullet. 9 times out of 10, that wounded is a lost limb, a crushed leg, a blown off limb. Because the majority of these deaths didn't happen before mission was accomplished, according to Der Fuhrer. The majority of these deaths occurred after he claimed the war was over. As a matter of fact, 2,716 of the 2,853 occurred after he claimed the war was over. Stay the course. This is the Bruce Birch radio program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll try to lighten the mood up a little bit. But you know what? I had to bring that to you because that's reality. And this is Reality Radio. I'll be right back.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If
You have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically. Before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
You're back on the Bruce Burch radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. We're going to go right over the phone lines. Our good friend Peter from Tallahassee, Florida, is joining us on line one. Peter, how are you doing this afternoon? This evening, tonight.
I'm doing great, Bruce. I basically have absolutely no reason why or any idea, really, why I called. I just wanted to talk to you, dude. I haven't talked to you in so long.
It's been a while.
How have you been? Glad that you're back.
I'm glad I'm back too, man. And, you know, I kind of like this late night slot. It's a little groovy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm so sorry I've missed. This is the first program of yours that I've been able to catch. I'm an elderly liberal, and
you don't hit elderly until you're at least 60, man. So okay.
Well, it could happen. It's coming up soon. And you know, you're talking about the lies about the war. You know, I'm having such fun watching this meltdown. I really am. I was talking to Joe earlier today, and I was telling him that I've been having such fun Googling anything with the word crisis after it. You could Google neocon crisis or Republican crisis or a left wing crisis or right wing rather crisis. And you just be amazed at what you find. The whole thing is flying apart at the seams. Go ahead.
No, we watched this. You know, see the crazy thing about it is, here on the Head On Radio Network, all of us have been talking about how watching the unraveling start way back in, I guess, I don't know, probably May, June of this year, things really started coming apart at the seams. And you know, the entire boxcar has gone off the rails at this point.
Oh,
you know,
man. Yeah,
George
Dirty Laundry
is flying. It is, and George Bush is grasping at straws to try to retain some kind of control, and it's just not happening. It's just not happening.
Even the pretense is gone. The neocons are all screaming that they had no part in it, and that the Republican Party, as it's expressed with Cheney and Bush and whoever else is involved, isn't really neocon. The neocons really didn't have a part in it. So that what we've been seeing is not the neocon agenda, because they really had no voice. They were not part of. And then you've got George Bush's daddy sending in what amounts to be an intervention team or a some sort of, you know, Mooney, you know, get the kid out of the, to save him from the neocons. So, you know, you've got the Republicans trying to save the Republicans from the neocons, and the neocons saying it's not their fault. and the whole thing is just all fall down as fast as you can go, and it's all because it's lies. I read a great article today that what's going to end up happening is that the Republicans themselves are going to demand that Bush and Cheney resign. It's just about inevitable. When the investigations start and the more and more people begin to find out what we've known for years, the embarrassment will be so huge that there will be no choice but to ask them to resign. And go ahead.
And it's interesting because the Democrats are saying, okay, well, you know, they're calling them oversight hearings, which I think is must be George Lakoff telling them, okay, don't call them investigations. Don't call it impeachment. Call them oversight hearings, and everybody will be relaxed about it. But that's what's going to happen is they're going to start looking into, Bob Wexler of Florida, who has been doing a great job in documenting the House there, has been doing a great job of documenting the outflow of money to Iraq and how it's been just misused, stolen, given away, disappeared, you know, to the tunes of billions of dollars that have just disappeared. They put money on pallets and shipped it over there and gave out duffel bags full of $100 bills.
Yeah, that alone, when these facts begin coming out, the embarrassment is going to reach down into the little blue-haired lady sect, the little holiness churches. There's no way anybody could miss this. And basically no way the megachurch and fundamentalist preachers could cover for it. It's just plain pure evil, just like we've been calling it since the start.
Exactly. And even James Dobson. I mean, even James Dobson is trying to distance himself now from what I'm seeing. It's kind of like I'm getting a perverse pleasure, if you will, out of watching them implode. The funny thing, though, is, and I heard this recently, and this is beginning to make its rounds. I feel reasonably sure that we'll hear this more and more, is that people are saying, and I can't remember exactly where I heard it, but people are beginning to say that, well, you know, George Bush's roots really aren't in extreme right conservatism. He's more of a moderate, and so working with Democrats will be easier for him than working with the neocons. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, is that fact?
So, you know, and I'm hearing this and I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. They're going to try to paint him as a liberal now.
Yeah, and it was the neocons' fault. At the same time, the neocons are screaming, no, no, that was not what we wanted at all. It was never implemented the way we wanted it. It's not us. It's not us. George Bush has set back the neocon cause, you know, hundreds of years or whatever the period of time they had assigned to it.
Well, he did definitely when he in 2000. I mean, there is no doubt that. And the chat room is responding to that statement. Everybody's going, "Bull Pucky Bruce, he's no liar, he's no liberal." And someone else says, "Bruce, yuck, liars."
you know,
they're absolutely right. But see, that's what they've been doing all along. They have been, I guess it was Jim who brought up the idea that you need to tell a lie so huge and so unbelievable that it actually becomes believable. You know, George Bush, war president?
Yeah, and it's all going to fall apart. And investigations is the Democrats' polite word of the impeachment off the table is absolutely absurd because it's legally not possible. Impeachment is not a personal decision on the part of any politician. That's as much of a circumvention of the Constitution as what the Republicans have been doing, circumventing the Constitution. The Constitution calls for impeachment with high crimes and misdemeanors, and clearly when it comes out that he's committed high crimes and misdemeanors and that thousands of Americans have died, not to mention the real estimates of, what, 650,000 Iraqi citizens are dead because of these lies, that's a high crime. And
it is.
Pelosi has no bill. No, hell yes, it's on the table. She just means it's not on the table yet.
And see, that's just it, is that, you know, and as I went back and read some about Milhouse's debacle in the 70s, and the interesting thing about impeachment or that kind of a movement is that once there's a little bit of forward movement toward that idea, it begins to take on a life of its own.
Aha, and I can see it birthing, baby. It's coming.
It's coming. I think that, and John Conyers even said that's not on the table. I think what's going to happen is they're going to start these oversight hearings. You know, things are going to, they're going to subpoena. You know, here's, you know, one of the I think it was brought up on my show last week that if there is a subpoena, you know, Dick Cheney says that if he's subpoenaed, he won't show up.
Huh.
If he doesn't show up and is found in contempt of Congress, that is a crime.
Oh, sure, it's a crime, and it,
an impeachable,
it may not be on the table, but it, the birth is in progress. I mean, you can see the head, you know.
It's crowning. It's crowning.
Yeah, it's crowning right now. It's crowning. And
we're at about five right now. You know, but Peter, you know, the other part of this too is that we absolutely need to get behind our Democrats, and you know, the only scary thing that I see that could happen is what's going on with Joe Lieberman right now.
I despise the man. What a weasel.
He's the only wild card in the deck, and he has said pretty much very plainly that should something happen within the Senate Democratic leadership that he doesn't agree with, he may jump ship. And the Republicans have promised him that if he does jump ship and swings the balance of power back to them, that he will retain his committee leadership, he will retain all of his seniority as a Republican.
Yeah, I remember there were remarks along those lines. I do.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, and I mean, you know, that may be the payback that they're hoping for on the right, is that should impeachment proceedings begin, that Joe Lieberman renounce his party membership and go over to the Republicans, which would ensure, of course, that George Bush wouldn't be convicted then, because it would be a Republican majority in the Senate. So, but you know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. I think the first things first is to, you know, we got to look at this lame duck session too, Peter, that they're about to embark upon there in D.C. And you know they're going to be cramming some stuff down our throats as a last-ditch effort to try to, you know, get some of the last things in that they want. So,
well, I'm just not sure that they can pull it off. I have high hopes. I really do have great expectations that not a whole lot is going to happen of any great damage during the next couple of months until January. Hell, all the damage that the mortal blows have already occurred. The holes in the hull of the ship are already there. I mean, the worst they can do is trash the restaurant. You know,
remove all the keys from the keyboards or something.
Yeah, or something like that. You know, the Sunday morning talking heads. Normally I'm not home on Sunday morning, so and normally I can't bear to watch the talking heads, the Meet the Press, and what is the other, there's three, ABC, CBS, and NBC all day.
Yeah, Nation, and then This Week with George Snuffleupagus.
Yes, Snuffleupagus. So I taped them this week because I just had to see what was going on. And you know, it was pretty uplifting. Both of the programs had Bolton on, who, you know, did his fast talking, you know, we're going to try to work with the Democrats, blah, blah, blah. But to actually see, you know, the Democratic leadership talking about new plans, you know, my heart just leapt with joy. It was wonderful. But there was one remark, and let me tell you, the three shows, it was NBC's Meet the Press that was by far the darkest and most Republican-oriented, we're not letting go of the power feeling to it. And
right.
You know, and George Will made a remark that just really angered me, and I haven't said anything to anybody about it yet, but what he slipped in this snide comment, and of course now the Democrats have slipped in this 1938 idea of a minimum wage. Oh, God. You know, it just gives you the whole mindset in a nutshell, as if it's antiquated.
No, where's a bow tie, Peter?
Yeah, well, he actually said 1938 idea, as if it had completely expired and the workers today are not worth, you know, working 40 hours a week and earning a living. You know,
well, he needs to be reminded that the way that the corporations are operating right now is actually a 1905 idea.
Yeah, and the corporate,
Baron.
Go ahead.
I was going to say robber baronism is what they're operating under.
Absolutely. And all the money that is going into just fewer pockets is what it boils down to. Joe made a wonderful remark today about that. That, you know, as far as the death penalty is concerned, that corporations, we should have the court, you know, really made me rethink death penalty. Death penalty should be applied to corporations. Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful idea. The very idea that corporations can go out and pour mercury into streams and kill, you know, hundreds of people. And, you know, that's just deserving of the death penalty, the dissolution of the corporation.
Right. If they want corporate personhood, then by golly, they need to have all the rights and responsibilities that goes along with it.
Absolutely. I'm suddenly pro-death penalty. I'm pro-death penalty for corporations. I'm pro-death penalty for those senators who are taking payoffs from the Abramoffs and that sort of thing. Hey, the death penalty doesn't sound half bad anymore.
Man,
I went conservative today. It's all Joe's fault.
I need to get the Dalai Lama to give you a call again, I think.
Oh, it won't help much to old.
Now, Peter, you must stop this line of thinking right now.
Oh, man, it's a new day. But, you know, how many more soldiers are going to die? You know, till we do this, phased withdrawal? The truth of the matter is that everybody needs to fly out tomorrow. We're not going to do any good in that. In militarily, there will be nothing more. What else can we do except get killed and more people die? Nothing. Can you give me any logical reason to stay four more months and then start a phase withdrawal?
No, I really can't.
Yeah, board the planes now. And impeachment off the table. Man, when the people start finding out what's really been going on, there'll be an uprising. The public will demand impeachment. It will be completely out of everybody's hand. The hearings are the key. The hearings are the key, man.
Hearings are the key. And the first act that I think John Conyers should do is banish James Sensenbrenner to the coat room in the basement of the Capitol.
Yeah, you know. And listening to the sermon on Sunday, the preacher was talking about, you know, this idea of, he wasn't really applying it to politics. He's talking about the idea of revenge. And, you know, revenge really isn't a Christian attitude. Here I am talking about being pro-death penalty all of a sudden. I've got it in me, too. But, you know, I'm just confused right now. Bruce, I don't even know how to act anymore. I'm so used to being stepped on so hard, I just don't know how to. And the Christian right, man, they're really upset. No more. The whole thing about the marriage amendment and all their other things, that's completely off the table. And another key thing here is this thing about the judges. He can't do any more of these conservative judges. That's out the window. And even on the lower court, can he, without objection?
No, but you know what's interesting?
What?
The talk show host today, Hugh Hewitt, recommended that Rick Santorum be the next one in line for a Supreme Court seat.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding you. He actually said that on the air. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's what we needed. You know, all the folks, the folks who are into bestiality across the nation are now very happy. They're,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is getting bizarre.
Well, I'm thinking this. I think that the neocon agenda is over for at least the next generation.
Well, it's repudiated now. You know, the other thing to think about in the course of all of this, of course, is. Okay. The other thing to think, I was reading my production chat there. Is that they still hold the executive branch of government, and they still are clinging to this unitary executive theory, which of course is a neocon invention, which means that as long as the president says it's okay, it's okay.
Exactly. It's a construct made of cards.
And what has to happen now? You know, the American people spoke and said, okay, we want a check and balance on our power, on the power of the United States government. You guys you're out of control. We want something to happen. Now, if the Democrats do not, you know, I mean, I know, for instance, myself, I voted Democrat because I want to see this bastard get impeached. I know everyone that I've talked to who voted Democrat has said that.
Me too.
And I think it's absolutely on us to write letters and to tell our representatives and our senators, hey, we just elected you. Now, you know, we elected you, and this is why we elected you. Now do your job. You know, go after them and hold them accountable. Crush this unitary executive, theory that they have, that the executive, you know, basically it's the theory that he's a king.
Well, it is. That's exactly what it boils down to. Absolutely.
So, I got to hit a quick break, my friend. We ran over, but that's cool because I love talking to you.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad you're back, Bruce. Honest to God, you were missed, and there's just no other Bruce kid. You are the only one. God just didn't make you more.
Well, and you know what, Peter? You are also unique, and you are a shining example of a wonderful guy, man.
I love you, dude. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend Peter from Tallahassee, Florida. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get right back to the phone lines. The telephone number is 1-877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I am Bruce Burns. I'll be right back.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. I had the misfortune of watching Joe Lieberman on Meet the Press Sunday. He was his usual insufferable, aw shucks, smug self, and he was parroting the conventional wisdom that the elections represent the return of the center of American politics. That's convenient for him, though it ignores the victory of socialist Bernie Sanders in Vermont and populists like Sherrod Brown in Ohio and John Tester over in Montana. Lieberman claims to be in the middle, though he won 70% of the Republican vote, which gives you a better indication of his leanings, and he may tip over soon. I'm sure Democratic leaders in Congress weren't delighted by his response to the following question from Tim Russert. If the Democrats ask for discipline in the Democratic caucus, and you start to feel uncomfortable with it, would you consider going across the aisle and joining the Republicans if they gave you the same chairmanship that you had and respected your seniority? After hemming about not answering a hypothetical, Lieberman finally responded to Russert's reasserted question, "You're not ruling that out at some future time," to which Lieberman said, "I'm not ruling it out." Lieberman, who ran as Gore's running mate on the 2000 Democratic ticket, may end up as a Republican yet and swing the Senate back to Bush. A snake is a snake. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
They're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. Let's go right back to the phone lines. Our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location is joining us this evening. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
Just fine, Bruce. How are you?
I'm doing really great, man. Thanks for asking. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, listening to your opening statement and what you had to say, when the program first began, the only word I have to say in response to that is agreed.
It's a tragedy of the highest order, Jim.
And as far as the unitary executive of George Bush is concerned, it is the closest thing historically to what I have studied as what was known as the Fuhrer Principle, or the Fuhrer Principle in Germany.
The Fuhrer Principle?
Right. It's called the Fuhrer Principle. Fuhrer Principle. And basically, okay, that's what the unitary executive, in my opinion, is the closest cousin to. And I feel, quite frankly, that it is time for George Bush and Mr. Cheney to lay down the supreme power. And I think there must be accountability, and after that there must be atonement. And I have consistently maintained that position ever since I've been on this network.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I think that's, you know, that there are larger forces at play, and those larger forces are, number one, in my view, world standing. You know, folks around the world were overjoyed to see the Democrats take control of the Congress. And I think the only way that we're going to repair many of those relationships that we have damaged throughout the last 6 years is to show the world that this democracy is indeed self-correcting.
Well,
and go ahead, Jim.
You're right. And, you know, correcting and correction, in my opinion, can take many forms. Some forms can be very mild, and some forms can be not so mild. And I'm not a vindictive person by nature, but when I consider what has been going on for the past 6 years, and the numbers of lives lost in Iraq, 650,000 according to Lancet, and the number of our men who have been bombed and killed, and whose lives have been wrecked and never will be the same, I really feel that the people who are responsible should be held accountable in the strictest way and meted out the strictest of all punishments.
Jim, you know a little bit about military law, right?
Yes, sir, I do a little bit about UCMJ.
Universal Code of Military Justice, is that what it is? Or?
Right.
Now, can a sitting commander in chief be prosecuted under the UCMJ?
Bruce, I'm not sure about that, but I know that if, in fact, unlawful orders are given, and it is, and you know, it is incumbent upon those people who are beneath that person not to follow those orders and to remove that commander.
I mean, okay. My producer's telling me that he's not a member of the military, so he can't be prosecuted that way.
Well, he's commander in chief, and I think that as such, he is the military. He is, whereas he is not a de facto. Well, let's put it this way: he may not be a de jure member of the military. He is a de facto military commander. He is commander in chief, and he is the one who gave the go-ahead and who signed the orders for the beginning of the war in Southwest Asia. And you know, I think that a case can be found to hold him accountable to the point of not only of removing him from office, and also prosecuting him in the criminal courts. Because I just, quite frankly, in my own mind, this may seem excessive to some people, I just feel that he is a war criminal. And those people who have aided and abetted his actions and this prosecution of the war in Iraq, to which I can see no real military solution.
Yeah, there isn't.
And there isn't. You know, in order for us to be what we say and say what we mean in the eyes of the world, we must bring these people to justice. I mean,
we must, and I think that what I think is probably going to happen is the justice that you're speaking of will come in on little cat's feet and build to a roaring tiger.
Well, I hope so. And everything that, you know, when I look at the military actions and the civil actions that were taken in Nuremberg in 1947, I can see a number of correlations between what has been happening here. I mean, we're looking at crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, waging an aggressive war against a nation which in no way had attacked us.
And let's not forget Hurricane Katrina. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on.
Yes, it does. And I think that it will be easier to bring him to justice for what he has done and what has been done in Iraq as opposed to an act of God with Katrina. But I do agree with the lack of compassion in response to what happened in Louisiana and Mississippi. They're definitely contributing factors, but I feel that it is necessary for there must be an accountability, a very strict accounting, and a very strict guideline for atonement. And atonement is, for me, is the key word, and I feel that the atonement, unfortunately, but or fortunately, depending on your point of view, is going to be harsh.
I think that,
decisions were made which has affected hundreds of thousands of people, and a person should not be allowed to do this with impunity, be allowed to get away with it. You know?
Yes, and you know what? And I think that that's going to happen. The Democratic leadership, I think, is they don't want to jump into this. I don't know what their thinking is at this point. I mean, I've read a lot of different things, but I think the biggest thing is that, you know, they want the facts to speak for themselves rather than everyone focus on what the particular Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid is saying. That they want the facts to come out so that they are facts and they come out the way that they come out and that it's presented to the American public a certain way. I think that's probably why they're not saying, yeah, we're going to go for investigations and impeachment. I mean, you know, because they have said it's off the table. However, when the facts are borne out, there will be no choice but to go that direction.
Well, you can't keep something like this sub rosa or beneath the table. And, you know, we've waited for a long time for this, and we can wait a little bit more. But the whole thing is, in my opinion, a question of waiting. And the key phrase will be, he wins, who waits.
I think it'll be. I think we'll be seeing some interesting things come out midsummer and early fall.
Yeah,
and should I make a prediction, Jim?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, that's the way it's going to be. And whereas, you know, as we wait for what is going to happen, we can't let them get away with anything. And
yeah.
The minute they try to. To extricate themselves from blame or responsibility or war guilt, then that must be addressed very, very quickly. And, you know, with alacrity. Because they will do that.
And now they're going to try to spin him like he is, he's actually not really that much of a conservative. He really just played to the conservatives to... for political reasons and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's one more lie after another, you know?
Well, you know, like I said about the big lie, but even the big lie comes to an end. And, you know, as far as the perpetrator of the big lie, people like Joseph Goebbels, and you mentioned that earlier, and thank you for your reference, but, you know, one day the truth will out, and only when that happens will this country be able to pursue another course with even a modicum of dignity and respect. And that's the way I feel. You know? And
I do appreciate you calling in tonight, my friend, and giving us some of those ideas. Time will tell, and I think the biggest thing, though, is sort of focusing on the immediate issues at hand. And I certainly hope that this fight over the House leadership position doesn't turn into a dogfight between Murtha and Steny Hoyer, just because, you know, we don't need that right now. What we need is unity, and we need a sense of purpose, and that the Democrats in Congress, you know, need to they have an agenda. We need to get with it and not, you know, get sidetracked by internal struggle. So,
but you know, Bruce, I can remember this, and you know, historically, when military commanders had put themselves in such a position that their position became untenable, they were given one of several options, and one of the options was to leave a pistol on the desk and close the door and let the gentleman decide. It's an interesting reference to history. That's all I'm making that as, you know.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. I got a break. I got a hit right here, my friend, but I do appreciate you calling in.
Take care. Good to have you back.
Thank you, sir. It's great to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, we do have an interesting situation, and I certainly hope that all of you do everything you can to write your congressmen and your senators, especially the ones that are new, and let them know what you think. Tell them, because if they believe that the public is behind serious investigations and impeachment, they'll do it. You know why? Because you are the voters. You're the people that put them into power. Now they need to do their jobs. Now they need to do their job. And the other part of that, too, is to remember that what may look like, what may be politically expedient may not happen in the speed with which we would like for it to happen. It may not happen as fast as you or I would like to see it. I mean, you know, we want to see an impeachment hearing day two of the Democratic leadership in Congress, don't we, you and I? Well, it may not happen that quickly. It may happen after a serious case is built, and that may take months, perhaps even years. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that, you know, we on the left don't, you know, we're not, if we have to, we will. But I don't think that we are of the mindset that the right is, in that revenge, ladies and gentlemen, is not a principle that I would prefer to say that we need to live by. However, bringing out facts, backing them up with more facts, and allowing the American people to speak on the subject and tell us, you know, tell those folks in power what they feel needs to be done, is absolutely what we stand for. It's about 59 minutes past the hour. We're going to go to our news break. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. For archives, please visit WhiteRoseSociety.org. I'll be right back after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. Today, the Bush administration filed federal court documents saying Guantanamo Bay prisoners have no rights in U.S. civil courts. The White House defended its authority to arrest people overseas and hold them in detention camps indefinitely with no access to attorneys, families, or groups such as the Red Cross. At the Pentagon, the term of Marine Commandant General Mike Hadji ended today. The general says there was no real plan for the running of Iraq after Saddam Hussein was stripped of power. He says his questions and concerns worked their way up the power chain, but he never received answers. In Baghdad, 20 people were killed, 18 wounded when a bomb exploded today on a minibus. Elsewhere in Iraq, at least 10 people were killed by gunmen. Yesterday, a suicide bomber killed 35 police recruits. In Camp Pendleton, a fourth U.S. Marine agreed to a plea bargain for the kidnapping and murdering of an Iraqi civilian last April. He pleaded guilty to lesser charges. The 109th Congress reconvened today. Likely House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has endorsed Pennsylvania Congressman John Murtha to be the majority leader. Florida Senator Mel Martinez will become the next chairman of the Republican National Committee. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are expected to call for U.S. troop reductions in Iraq within 4 to 6 months. Today, President Bush expressed opposition to the plan. At the National Mall today, the groundbreaking ceremony for the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. It is the first Washington memorial for an African American. It's expected to be completed in 2008. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani announced formation of a presidential exploration committee for the 2008 election. A recent CNN poll says 29% of Republicans favor his candidacy. Senator John McCain also announced he's taking steps to announce his candidacy. In California, San Francisco today withdrew its bid for the 2016 Olympics. The San Francisco 49ers announced several days ago it would not build the new stadium, meant to be the linchpin of the San Francisco bid. In the Gaza Strip, Hamas and Fatah have reportedly agreed upon a new candidate for Palestinian prime minister. The U.S.-educated professor Mohammed Shabir has ties to both groups. At Cape Canaveral, the space shuttle Discovery is on the launching pad. The date for the launch...
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the Network of Preferred Community Banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why he got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both?
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and Beyond Banking from the Network of Preferred Community Banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The UN says collection of rainwater could provide a cheap, easy solution to Africa's droughts. That's a result of a pilot project in Kenya. A university study released today says the risk of a certain kind of breast cancer goes up in younger women who eat red meat. The study says the increased risk comes from hormonal residues in cattle. The Treasury Department reports October's budget deficit is $49.3 billion. That's up $2 billion from last October. The FDA is issuing a warning for patients and parents of children taking the popular flu remedy Tamiflu. That's due to reports of delirium, hallucination, and suicidal behavior, particularly in children. Australian government scientists have invented a T-shirt for air guitar players. The shirt has motion sensors in its elbows and translates movement into corresponding sound. Sun Microsystems announced today it will make Java free on the Internet as open-source software. The addition of Java is one of the most significant in years for the open-source community. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.76 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 23 points at 12,131, the NASDAQ up 17 at 2406, and the S&P 500 was up 4 at 1384. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
It's time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
All right, welcome back to the program. It's about 5 minutes past the top of the hour. You heard Annabelle Lund there from the Quality from the Quality News Network talking about what happened today in D.C. with the groundbreaking at the Martin Luther King Monument, where construction is, you know, it was a groundbreaking. It amazes me, though. We have a man who showed up there today and basically mocked the very memory of Dr. King. President Bush showed up and said that he was proud to dedicate the memorial to the, quote, lasting memory of a great man, end quote. He also went on to say, Dr. King showed us that a life of conscience and purpose can lift up many souls, and on this ground a monument will rise that preserves his legacy for the ages. He also said, honoring Dr. King's legacy requires more than building a monument. It requires the ongoing commitment of every American. So we will continue to work for the day when the dignity and humanity of every person is respected and the American promise is denied to no one. Liar! That's right. I called him a liar. You know why I called him a liar? Because what he works for is the antithesis of what Dr. King's legacy is. Anyone remember what happened in Hurricane Katrina when 10,000 African Americans were left stranded in New Orleans and were kept in the city at gunpoint? Anybody remember how the energy policy of the United States was basically governed by the top oil companies? And how much the Exxon CEO took home in bonuses this past year? $423 million. Meanwhile, over at Walmart, out here in Greensboro on West Wendover Avenue, there's folks making $8 an hour. And not even able to get full-time work because their robber baron company, which is a right-wing supported and right-wing supportive company, refuses to pay them a living wage, doesn't give them the hours that they need, refuses to give them health benefits, and will close a store before it can be unionized. The workers aren't even allowed to participate in democracy in the workplace. So, George Bush, if you are going to continue to work for the day when the dignity and humanity of every person is respected, perhaps continuing should be we will start working for the day. Because everything that you've been doing in power, sir, has been the very opposite of what I would call dignity, humanity, and respect. In fact, well, I would say that it's the very opposite of dignity and humanity and respect. And the reason why I would say that is, well, look at Katrina. Look at corporatism run rampant in the United States. Look at what's happening in Iraq. I would say, large amounts of evidence there. Yes, but Dr. King will now have his own memorial. It is scheduled, ladies and gentlemen, to be opened in, or completed in 2008, 40 years after King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, this the funding for this has come primarily from corporate donors, like Tommy Hilfiger and General Motors, for instance. Now, let me ask this question and pose this out to the listening audience. Maybe I've lost my mind here. I mean, it's very possible, but I wonder why we can't, when we're spending billions of dollars in Iraq, why the government can't spare $100 million to build a monument to perhaps one of the greatest Americans to ever walk the face of our country. Instead, corporate donors are paying for it. Why is it that this man, this wonderful, amazing man who changed the American experience, why is it that corporate donors, the very companies perhaps that he would have railed against, are the ones paying for his memorial? I recall the speech that he gave, Beyond Vietnam was the name of it. And in the speech, Dr. King was talking about a lot of different things, but he was talking, I remember one particular passage, and I don't remember the words exactly. I wish I did, because it's very inspiring. But he said, you know, when the time comes that our nation cares more about war and funding war than it does about taking care of its own citizens, what does that say about the state of our nation? It says a lot. It says that we care more about murder than we do life. Isn't it ironic that those very same people who would support this war in Iraq would call themselves pro-life? Isn't it ironic that the very people that would support the capital, the death penalty, the capital punishment, would call themselves pro-life? Those that would serve out revenge would call themselves pro-life. Those that would cut welfare benefits to those who needed it so that children would be able to eat and go to school and be well prepared for their studies, those who would cut those benefits would call themselves pro-life. Those that would make sure that Medicare, the Medicare Part D Act, which made it crazy for the elderly to figure out how to get prescriptions, would call themselves, isn't it crazy that they would call themselves pro-life? And those that would privatize Social Security so that you and I, ladies and gentlemen, by the time we get there, would have to gamble on the market in order to have any kind of retirement worth having, isn't it amazing they would call themselves pro-life? All of those ideas are the very antithesis of what life is about, because in my view, and I could be very wrong with this, but in my view, living does not equal existing. Living means living well. Living means enjoying your life and having something worth having. It doesn't mean scraping by and fighting for every last dollar you can get, you know, while the upper echelon of society gets richer and richer, and all the money gets concentrated into less hands at that level. So, you know, Dr. King left us a legacy, and that legacy was that, number one, we take care of each other. There is no doubt in my mind that Dr. King today would be very disappointed in the Bush administration. He was very disappointed in the Nixon administration, or I'm sorry, in the Johnson administration when he died. He was very disappointed with the state of race relations in the United States, and we have people like George Allen still out there, still flying their Confederate flag here in 2006. He was very disappointed with the rate of poverty among the minority communities in the United States. We still have that today. He was very disappointed in the fact that even then, African Americans made up the largest segment of the population in prisons, and we still have that today. He was also very disappointed that African Americans were executed at that time at alarming rates, and we have that also today in our prisons. So what's changed? What's changed is that he left behind a mark. He left behind something to strive for. Because being spiritual is not about what you say, it's about what you do. And when this man, Martin Luther King, walked his faith, he stood up for and created a movement and did it nonviolently that changed the face of our country. He talked of justice. He talked of peace. He talked of love. When was the last time you heard those words out of one of our leaders? I say we're overdue for a leader to come along and say those words and to mean them and to walk them all the way to the place where he leaves this planet. It took a lot of courage to do what he did, and I am absolutely I'm floored and happy that there's going to be a monument. However, I think it should be funded with public money, and they should spare no expense, because he was perhaps one of the best leaders this country has ever seen, even though he was never elected to any public office. I certainly hope his legacy does live on. And I certainly hope that people like George Bush actually read about it and figure out what it means to be spiritual and what it means to be a leader rather than a dictator. It's 17 minutes past the hour. This is the Hanon Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show tonight, you can. 1-877-443-2366. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Michael Franti, Lettucey and LZ in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know
what you want? Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Stop, drop and roll, and I will tell you where I'm coming from.
All right, they're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's 21 minutes past the hour here, and glad to be back with you. Now, I'm looking at a couple of different things, and I mentioned this earlier in the telephone call with one of our good friends. Senator Joseph I. Lieberman of Connecticut said yesterday that he will caucus with Senate Democrats in the new Congress, but he would not rule out switching to the Republican caucus if he starts to feel uncomfortable among Democrats. Lieberman, a Democrat who won re-election as an independent, also said he wants to be called an independent Democrat. He said yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press that he will begin his new term as a Democrat because it would make him part of the congressional leadership. He is scheduled to become chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. He said, quote, "I'm going to caucus with the Democrats, both because it's good for my constituents in Connecticut because I retained my seniority. I become a committee chair, but also I want to continue to work to bring the party back to its historic traditions of strength on national security, foreign policy, and innovation and progress in domestic policy." He said that because voters returned him to Capitol Hill as an independent, quote, "I am now an independent Democrat, capital I, capital D. As a matter of fact, the Secretary of the Senate called my office and said, how do you want to be identified? And that's it, independent Democrat." He was asked about the possibility that he might switch caucuses if he became uncomfortable as Democrats sought to enforce party discipline, particularly if the GOP offered to keep him as a committee chairman and respect his seniority. His response was, quote, "I'm not ruling it out, but I hope I don't get to that point. And I must say, and with all respect to the Republicans who supported me in Connecticut, nobody ever said we're doing this because we want you to switch over." it could be something major, or it could be something very small that would make him switch. I do believe, though, that he probably will. I hate to say that, but he is, he's just, that's the kind of guy Lieberman is. All he cares about is himself. He doesn't care about, you know, the larger, I'm sorry, my producer just sent me a message. He says, Lieberman said he insists upon being called the senator of all senators. He also said he'll split the party if he doesn't get a tiara. Yeah, well, you know, it's probably going to happen, folks. It's probably going to happen, you know, so we might as well get used to the idea that he may, at the very first upheaval in the Senate, he'll jump ship. Now, the other thing, one of the top stories of the day, and I wanted to bring this to your attention also because it's fairly important. We have covered detainee rights here on this radio program quite extensively, even so far as having Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift on the day after the Supreme Court ruling of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, which basically outlawed the detainee treatments that were going on in Guantanamo and around the world. Charlie Swift, of course, was the lead military counsel in that case. Immigrants arrested in the United States may be held indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism and may not challenge their imprisonment in civilian courts, the Bush administration said Monday. I got to tell you, again, for a government, for an executive branch of government that says it wants to work together and it's ready to do things the right way, let me read this again. This doesn't really indicate that. Immigrants arrested in the United States may be held indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism and may not challenge their imprisonment in civilian courts. The Bush administration said this on Monday, said this today, opening a new legal front in the fight over the rights of detainees. In court documents filed with the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, the Justice Department said a new anti-terrorism law being used to hold detainees in Guantanamo Bay also applies to foreigners captured and held in the United States. Case in point, Ali Saleh Kalah Al-Mari, a citizen of Qatar, was arrested in 2001 while studying in the United States. He has been labeled an enemy combatant, a designation that under a law signed last month, you know the one, the detainee bill, the one that strips your habeas corpus rights also. He's been labeled an enemy combatant, a designation that under a law signed last month strips foreigners of the right to challenge their detention in federal courts. That law is being used to argue that Guantanamo Bay cases is being used to argue the Guantanamo Bay cases, but Al-Mari represents the first detainee inside the United States to come under the new law. Aliens normally have the right to contest their imprisonment, such as when they are arrested on immigration violations or for other crimes. Jonathan Hafetz, an attorney for Al-Mari, says, "It's pretty stunning that any alien living in the United States can be denied this right." He also says it means any non-citizen, and there are millions of them, can be whisked off at night and be put in detention. The new law says that enemy combatants will be tried before military commissions, not even a civilian judge or jury, and establishes different rules of evidence in the cases. It also prohibits detainees from challenging their detention in civilian court. Why should this matter? Well, very simply, it's a very short step to you and I being held indefinitely with no way to challenge our detention. And not only that, anyone deserves the right to face their accusers. We have constitutional rights in this country. If we take someone and we put them in prison and we hold them under suspicion of terrorism, they need to be able to review the charges against them and prepare their defense. It's that simple. That's what a humanitarian country does. It doesn't take people and hold and rush them away in the dark of the night with hoods over their heads, stick them on airplanes, and fly them to places like Morocco and Romania where they can be waterboarded. However, that's what's been happening in this country for the last 6 years, 5 years or so. So, you know, we've got to, you know, this is one of those areas that has to be corrected. Uh-oh, looks like we have Jim back on the line for a further comment. Okay, let's go ahead and take that call, Bob, and then we'll hit our break shortly thereafter. That Jim, how are you doing?
No, I just wanted to, I heard your comment, and I just wanted to ask you a question. You know, back in Nazi-occupied Europe, Hitler promulgated a decree called the Night and Fog Decree, the Nachtum Nebel,
right,
which basically indicated that those people who were considered to be adversaries to the state could disappear into the night and fog. And do you see much difference between some of these manifestations of ad hoc law that Bush is pushing through, and that's exactly what this is ad hoc law in that night and fog decree?
No, I don't see any difference, Jim. Matter of fact, if anything, they've been playing from the Nazi handbook from day one.
Well, what I said earlier, I did not see out of anger, spite, or malice, because I've gone through all those stages ever since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, basically what I would like to see done is justice. And that's what I meant by accountability and atonement.
Absolutely. Well, I totally agree with you, and I think that justice, we were talking, I was talking, actually, about Dr. King and some of what he viewed as justice. And, you know, the reality is that I don't think you or I or anyone else would be happy with a justice that is based in revenge. I think we would be happy in justice that is based in fact and that is based in doing the right thing. But, you know, I, for one, don't want to use the same tactics that they've used, because that means lowering ourselves to that level, does it not?
Absolutely, and that's the reason, you know, you go through stages of disbelief, and then you go through another stage of questioning, and then you go through a stage of anger, and when your anger abates, then you are able to see things a little more clearly. And then you arrive at a point in your thinking where you can see where injustices have been committed, and the atonement for those injustices must be a part of the process. And, you know, that has nothing to do with malice, forethought, or vindictiveness, but it's just a matter of setting things to right if you can.
Well, I totally think that, and the rest of the world is depending on us to do that. So,
I
definitely
think so. And it is just absolutely incredible that these people can do what they've done and then try to put on some other type of coat or try to pretend like, you know, oh no, we weren't a part of that. I mean, you know, when Mussolini fell from power in 1943 or 1944, the Tiber, the river that runs through Rome, was so clogged with black shirts of the fascists who threw them in the water that it damn near stopped up the river.
There's an interesting movie that a young woman, young German woman made, and I can't think of the name of it now. I think her name was Sophie, who made the woman who made the movie. But she went back and she did all this research to find out who was involved with the Nazis in her German town. And she began to dig, and of course everyone got very uncomfortable because there were many people who were involved with the Nazis, but didn't, you know, but when the Nazis fell from grace, of course they disavowed any connection. And, you know, I'm trying to remember the name. I'll look it up. But it was a great movie. I recommend that you see it. I'll find the name and try to, you know, just remind me. And next time you call, and I'll get you the name of that movie. But I think that's what happens. You know, people.
Well, they get
power hungry. They get they get stars in their eyes, and then, you know, will follow some of these evil people to the ends of the earth, and that's sort of what has happened somewhat with George Bush and company.
Well, you know, Bruce, as far as what happened in Germany before Hitler came to power, and I'm not making any apologies for the Nazi regime, but the Germans were really dragged through it, and they had a pretty rough time. And they were treated unfairly at the end of World War One. And the whole Treaty of Versailles was based upon revenge. And you can see what that created, that revenge motif created. It created Adolf Hitler, and it gave him his access to power.
Well, I wonder, Jim, following that line of reasoning, what's going to happen with Iraq 20 years from now?
Good God only knows. I would say probably, Bruce, it's going to split into three parts because it's just, it's like I said before, Iraq is an amalgam created by a British cartographer, and I would say that the Kurds would go their way, and Turkey would probably try to absorb the Kurds. And the Shias and the Sunnis will go their way. And it's just the only thing that held it together was Saddam and his iron hand. And, you know, and these people have their differences that have, you know, existed since almost time immemorial. And unfortunately, we're going to have a power vacuum over there. And I would think Iran is going to probably absorb part of it. And, you know, we have really created, we really, in my opinion, put ourselves into a hornet's nest over there. And it was just for what?
Yeah, well, I agree.
And for what? And, but like I say, what I said earlier was not born out of any sense of big business or I'm going to get you. It's just a matter of if we are to assume any type of position of decency in the world, we're going to have to atone. And the people responsible are going to have to be held accountable, in my opinion. And
well, I think they will. It'll take a little time, but I'm sure they will. I appreciate your calling, Jim.
Well, and as far as Mr. Lieberman is concerned, well, I wouldn't worry too much about him.
Arrogance bears itself out, doesn't it?
I think so. And if he wants to be the kingmaker or the senator of all senators, then, you know, could we be approaching what the Greeks call hubris?
Yes. I tell you what, though, Jim, why don't you mail him a tiara?
I wouldn't want to do that. It might mess up his hair, like Nancy Reagan said that she wouldn't wear one because it would mess up her hair. Remember that?
Yeah.
By the way, I pulled out an old CD the other night and I thought about you.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
Cosmos Factory.
Oh, okay.
Remember that?
I do indeed.
And that old song by Creedence, I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Huh?
And I was just thinking about that, and I was playing that the night of the election.
And we had a good time out here on the network that night, for sure. That was,
I called in, remember?
Yeah. And we had a good time that night.
And I gave you a prediction of an inside straight.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not, you know, I was just going out on a limb there, but I was, overjoyed to see what had happened. But anyway, listen, I just wanted to append my earlier remarks by saying that revenge and vengeance is no way to do business, but it's just a matter of justice, and that will get you a lot further than any type of revenge or motif, because we see what that did in Europe after World War One, and we don't want to see that happen here. And as you say, we've got to be a step above them and not do what they've done. And that's basically what I wanted to finish my remarks on your program last night.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim, and I certainly hope you have a wonderful evening, my friend.
And the same to you, and thank you for the second chance to come back on the show.
Have a good night, my friend. That's our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location, again, somewhere in the northern hemisphere. He may be moving around at this point. Maybe he's in the western hemisphere. I'm not sure. This is going to Bruce Birch radio program. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll be in the last segment of the show. We're being brought to you by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Carpenters and Millwrights. So I'll be right back.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. Another week, another Israeli atrocity. On November 8th, as progressives were celebrating electoral successes here in the U.S., Palestinians in Gaza were under attack. The Israelis shelled the town of Beit Hanun, killing 18 civilians, most of them women and children, and wounding at least 40 more. Israel said it was an accident, but Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said he can't promise that more such accidents won't occur in the future. That's mighty consoling of him. And what he doesn't appear to understand, and what George Bush doesn't appear to understand, is that these indefensible actions by the Israeli government don't make Israel any safer, and they don't make the U.S. any safer. Israel is simply speeding up the cycle of violence as Hamas leaders vowed more suicide bombings in Haifa and Tel Aviv. Hamas leaders also announced that the U.S. would be taught some hard lessons. For Hamas knows, just as everyone knows in the Arab and Muslim worlds, that Israel is the chief U.S. ally in the Mideast and the leading recipient of U.S. aid worldwide. It is the empire's outpost. So long as the U.S. lets Israel get away with brutalities like Beit Hanun, we here at home become more imperiled. There's a lot of hopeful talk now in Washington about change, about a new direction. One place this change, this new direction, is most needed is in U.S. policy toward Israel and the Palestinians. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, hey,
on the Bruce Burke Radio Program. It's about 17 minutes till the top of the hour. Got a few more minutes to get in on the show today if you want to do that this evening. Let's see. The telephone number is 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. You can also email me, Bruce at Bruce Burch. That's B-U-R-C-H. Bruce at BruceBurch.com. We're in our last segment of the show this evening. That's good because I have a couple of labor issues I wanted to bring your way. You know how I feel about organized labor. I have on this show been extremely supportive of unions. I've been extremely supportive of workers' rights. Why? Well, because I've been one of those workers. And probably will end up being one of those workers again at some point. I am right now doing the radio program, and that's my job right now, and that's cool. But you know what? There's nothing better than getting out there and getting your hands dirty and doing something that you know that you feel worthwhile about. You know, I enjoy doing that. I like working. But I don't like working for slave wages, and I don't like working for employers that are trying to use their employees to make more profits. Capitalism itself, you know, if you want to make money, that's fine, but you should also have the responsibility of taking care of the people that work for you. Now, let's go straight to a story out of Houston, Texas. And I'm just going to read this to you, and then I'll give you a website. You can go check it out if you want to yourself. More than 1,700 Houston janitors seeking a shot at the American dream are in week three of a historic strike that began October 23rd. The janitors are on strike to protest the failure of five large national cleaning firms to bargain in good faith. These firms responded to the janitors' efforts to lift themselves out of poverty by unleashing a campaign of civil rights abuses against workers speaking out for improvements. The strike itself could have national implications for hundreds of thousands of low-wage service workers, but immediately at stake are the living standards of 5,300 Houston workers and their families who are paid $20 a day with no health insurance for part-time work. Last fall, seeking a shot at the American dream, Houston janitors made the historic choice to form a union with the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU. Their decision capped one of the largest successful organizing drives by private sector workers ever in the southern half of the United States. Since forming a union with the SEIU, the janitors have been saying there is no future on $20 a day and have been seeking a raise to $8.50 an hour, which is not much to ask for, folks. They've been seeking a raise to $8.50 an hour, more hours, and health insurance in a citywide union contract. Wealthy landlords, Hines and Chevron, have the power to settle the strike. By negotiating one contract covering all janitors who clean the majority of Houston's office space, workers can begin moving out of poverty without putting any one company at a competitive disadvantage. And in the highly competitive market of contract cleaning, it is the landlords that hire the cleaning firms that negotiate and set rates for janitors' wages and benefits. But despite supporting wages of $10 an hour, full-time work and health insurance in other big cities, national commercial landlords with billions in assets, such as Hines, are refusing to do the same in Houston. And despite hauling in $14 billion in profits last year, Chevron, which controls more Houston office space than anyone, also is opposing their efforts. Together, those two mega corporations have the power to help settle the strike by directing the cleaning firms in their buildings to meet the janitors' contract proposals. This, ladies and gentlemen, is what's going on in Houston, Texas. Janitors are making $20 a day. 5,300 janitors in Houston are making $20 a day. You know what's coming, don't you? An action. That's right. There's going to be an action on November 15th. That's 2 days from now. There will be an action, a nationwide action. Okay? This will be at Chevron Texaco gas stations all around the country, in 20 cities across the country. People are being asked to go outside of Houston, or excuse me, go outside of Chevron or Texaco gas stations, hand out leaflets, display a banner or sandwich board, and ask the station manager to fax a letter to Chevron's headquarters. Okay? Now, if you want to find out about this, and I encourage you strongly to go check this out, and I'm going to try to get somebody on the show tomorrow night to talk about this. You can go to ChevronWon'tYouJoinUs.org. ChevronWon'tYouJoinUs.org. Okay? ChevronWon'tYouJoinUs. ChevronWon'tYouJoinUs.org. Go to that website. You can download materials and details for the day of action. You can find out what's going on around the country. You can find a Chevron or Texaco station near you. If you have a local group of folks that is used to doing demonstrations, call them up. Get them out. These folks need to be able to do the work that they, you know, and get paid for a decent day's work. It's shameful that in a country such as ours, you know, that this continues to go on. It blows my mind. It absolutely blows my mind. Again, we still have, there's a couple other stories here that I wanted to throw your direction. Primarily, that was the top story for that. The other story that I wanted to bring to your attention about workers is that, again, people in the American workplace get killed on the job quite a bit. There is a great commentary, news and commentary on workplace health and safety, labor and politics called Confined Space. And if you've never checked out that blog, I encourage you strongly to go check it out because it is pretty cool. It's spewingforth.blogspot.com. Dartmouth, Massachusetts, Kevin O'Driscoll took a photo of his daughter Shannon in her graduation robe off of his living room wall last night, cradling it in both hands. The big bearded trucker sighed, blinked, and then smiled. She was probably the only graduate there with pink hair, he said. The sun glinted off of her flamingo-colored bob and white Dartmouth High School robe in the picture. Ms. O'Driscoll, 24, had just finished holding a sign with a group supporting State Ballot Question 3, which would have allowed child care workers to unionize, and was crossing Route 1 on the way to her car. Before she was killed, she was a national representative for the Service Employees International Union. She was stationed in Chicago over the summer but returned to Massachusetts 3 weeks ago for a shoulder operation. She was campaigning with a busted shoulder, her arm in a sling, her father said. I was extremely proud of her. She was among a group of people holding signs on the sidewalk at the intersection of Route 1 and Interstate 495 at about 5 p.m. on Sunday. Plainville Police Chief Edward Merrick said apparently once they were done, they walked a little ways down on Route 1 northbound and crossed Route 1 southbound. Their cars were parked at a shopping center nearby. Ms. O'Driscoll was the last to cross, and she was struck by a car. Police do not plan to charge the driver. The demonstrators were in a dark area where there were no crosswalks or stoplights, and the driver did not appear to be speeding. And folks, say a prayer tonight if you're a praying person. Have a moment of silence, if you will, for those people who have gone away from this earth but who believed in something larger than themselves. If there was one, if there would be one message that I would like to convey this evening, it would be that. It would be that, you know, we never know when we're going to buy the farm, do we? So we need to live our lives in such a way that we are trying to improve our society for the next one coming along. Ms. O'Driscoll, union organizer, did that. Martin Luther King did that. Many of you have done that. Because after all, isn't that all we have to give to the next generation? Is a better society? Isn't that all we have to offer them? Is a country in which they believe that they can achieve the American dream, the so-called American dream? I think that's all we have to offer. And it depends on you and me and our efforts and our struggles in trying to create that kind of reality for the next ones coming along. I've been very fortunate to be on the air with you tonight and feel very fortunate to be a part of your lives this evening. This is the Bruce Birch radio program. I would like to thank my producer, Bob, my announcer, John, the IT professional for Head On Radio Network, Peter. Also want to thank Gene and the entire cadre of the Head On Radio Network bloggers. You guys rock. Also want to thank the mods in the chat room for hanging out and helping the new folks get along. If you haven't ever been there, I encourage you strongly to go check it out. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Also want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for archiving this show and all the shows on the Head On Radio Network. And, you know, I'd also want to thank the sponsors of this program, the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights, man. Another wonderful union doing what needs to be done to create the right kinds of working conditions for working men and women across America. You and I deserve no less. And last but not least, folks, thank you for joining me. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program, and remember, it's your democracy too. It's not a spectator sport. I will see you tomorrow night.
He came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles, we're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. The revolution. Prison doors swung open, mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air, and Mumy and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square, and they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the Neil left their faces, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. Roger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction were inspected and destroyed. Battleships dismantled, never again to be deployed.
Go bid. In Iraq, 7 more U.S. soldiers and Marines were killed today. That makes 33 so far this month. In Baghdad, 20 people were killed, 18 wounded when a bomb exploded today on a minibus. Elsewhere in Iraq, at least 10 people were killed by gunmen. In Camp Pendleton, California, a 4th U.S. Marine agreed to a plea bargain for kidnapping and murdering an Iraqi civilian last April. He pleaded guilty to lesser charges. In Afghanistan, a report issued yesterday indicates insurgent activity has increased fourfold this year. Rising violence in 2006 has led to the deaths of 3,700 people. In South Korea today, the government said it will not take part in the inspection of North Korean ships to ensure they are not carrying weaponry. South Korean officials say they don't want to increase tension between them and their northern neighbor. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and Science is next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right.